Well, here in the upper Midwest, we treasure the times of the year when we can garden outdoors. I bet you do. I know I certainly do. The reality is that for a variety of reasons, including sometimes long, cold winters, you do get to spend a lot of time indoors as well. So having a nice range of houseplants that are at their best in different season just makes a whole lot of sense. Larry Mueller here again. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. And it's always fun to have Tova Martin with us. She is the author of, my goodness, about a dozen gardening books, including kind of the one we'll talk about and zero in on with her today. It's called The Indestructible Houseplant. And we've talked with her about it before. But Tova, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Larry.
It's so great to hear your voice again.
I know. We have so much fun on this show.
We always have a good time, don't we?
We sure do.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of people will probably say, I do not know of any indestructible houseplant. How do you define an indestructible houseplant?
Well, you know, I have to say that I did testing on this. You know, I actually ran some plants through the. I'm not going to say I was not cruel.
Oh my goodness!
Not cruel to any plant. I couldn't be accused of that by anybody, but I did put them through the stress testing, and you know, I was surprised, Larry, at how many plants were very, very durable in a variety of situations. Now, you know, we're all a little different as gardeners, right, and indoor mm-hmm. gardeners. So, you know, I tend to be an underwaterer. How about you? Do you under or overwater?
I tend to under primarily because of neglect.
Well, you know, busy.
Yeah.
Busy people. So, you know, I think a lot of people are tend to more toward the side of neglect rather than over showering affection on plants. So I limited water. I didn't give them their ideal, you know, light conditions sometimes. And I was amazed at how well plants survived, certain plants. And, you know, at first, when I first started the book, I had kind of a limited number of plants that were going to be mentioned. Well, it grew and it grew and it grew. And I've got lots of suggestions for all kinds of situations, you know, depending upon whether you have bright light or low light, or if you have, low humidity, high humidity, whether you tend to overwater or underwater. I have all kinds of ideas.
Well, and you have some wonderful photography to go along with it. Your plants are so, and your pots are so beautiful, and they all seem to be fit perfectly wherever they are in your photo.
Well, Kendra Kleineff did the photography, and she is very, very good. Almost all the photos were taken in my own house, but I did ask a few fellow indoor gardeners, and we did little sections on them, people that collect maybe ferns or agaves or something like that, to bring them in. But I have to tell you, and I have to do one little sidestep here, and I have to ask, how's Limey?
Limey is my lime tree, for those of you who... Limey is still sitting outside on my porch, on my second-story porch.
Wow.
And I'm thinking Limey may have to come in this weekend.
Wow. That's amazing. Is this the latest that Limey has stayed out?
Yes. Limey's probably wondering what's... But Limey is producing limes like you wouldn't believe.
Wow.
So I shouldn't say... It's like a half dozen limes on her right now. I've pulled a few recently for various things.
Could it be football season?
Yeah, it is football season, and they found a good use. And And so Limey's going to have to come back in, but I hate to bring Limey back in because she likes it so much in the summertime out there, but she's not going to like it out there quickly.
No, they don't like it that cold. I have to say citrus and limes are not on my not really on my indestructible list.
Yeah.
They are a little more challenging than what, so that kind of gives you an idea. You know, not everybody made the cut.
Yeah, well, sure.
But there are, you know, plenty, there's no reason why you can't enjoy great color and blossoms. And, you know, they are working on some of these indestructible plants, plants that, you know, kind of were your grandmother's house plants, and they're making them a lot more exciting with colorful leaves,
yes,
larger flowers. Even, you know, I have to say that some of these plants, I kind of thought, said, never, and in past shows, Larry, I have said, no spider lilies for me. No spider plants for me. Well, I changed my song. And I have to say that, you know, the Wisconsin public radio audience was really part of the reason why I gave spider plants another look, because you had so many people put up so many beautiful pictures on your Facebook page of their spider plants. And I said, you know, I've got to give it another chance.
And you have, and you've been successful.
Not only that, but I found, you know, they're doing work with spider plants. There's a curly one now.
Yeah.
Called Bonnie.
What is it again?
It's called Bonnie, and it's a curly leaf spider plant. It looks like each leaf is a corkscrew.
Oh, is that cool? I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's so cool.
Wow. I tell you what. And speaking of audience, the listeners, we might give them a chance to join in if you'd like to call, and already have a number of calls. But there's still a line open at 1-800-642-1234. But you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And we always love to see photos. If you got some nice houseplant photos, put them up on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, you can also ask a question while you're there. We would love to hear from you.
Show them off.
Show them off. Let's go to Cindy in Antioch, Illinois, who has a question. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Well, speaking of limey, I have a question about a lemon tree that I recently purchased. And it had been outdoors, so when I purchased it, I brought it indoors. It's about a foot tall, and it was loaded with blossoms and still is. But my question is it supposed to be exuding a sticky substance around the floor beneath it?
Around what? The flower?
Yeah, well, around the flower and on the leaves. The flower, I don't know, it smells so sweet. I'm thinking that maybe it's like a Hoya plant where it exudes.
Yeah, there may be some insects involved here.
Yeah, there's so much nectar in a citrus flower that it can kind of bubble over, it's true. But the foliage should not be, there's no what they call exudate, that the leaves, it comes on the leaves. So it might be a sort of like a honeydew sort of situation where you've got an insect problem.
And what should I do? I've looked at it, and I don't see anything. I don't see any insects. I just see the sticky substance on the leaves. So what should I be doing?
Well, one idea, you know, I always suggest that people go to their agricultural experiment stations for insect identification to be sure, you know, because they are very, very good at diagnosing things like that. But if you're not seeing anything, kind of hard to tell. I mean, aphids sort of follow on an exudate and that sort of thing. But, you'd have to be able to, I suggest you get out a magnifier as a possibility.
There are aphids that are really, really small, and they're often on the underside of the leaf. Our UW extension, it was Tova was talking about, has some pretty material on that, on aphids, among other things. And if you go to the learning store, UWEX.edu. So just go to, and we have a link on our Facebook page. Brandy's telling me, yeah.
Okay. And just an idea, Cindy, something that you can do that's, you know, totally non-dangerous type of thing is just wash off those leaves.
Yeah.
You know, give them a good bath and cold water, you know, and then bring them back into the warm place. But it doesn't do any harm at all to wash off those leaves.
And, put it in the shower.
Yeah. Shower with your citrus.
There you go. And I think that's a really good idea because I think I'm betting on aphids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm betting on aphids. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Cindy. Judy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry. I have a couple questions, one quite easy one and one instructive question.
Okay.
The easy one is I have a cut-in from my deceased grandma's 100-year-old Christmas cactus. I need to repot it, and I want to know what sort of potting mixture it is. The second indestructive question, which, Larry, you're probably going to be able to help with, is we live in a household with three cats.
Uh-huh.
Are there plants that cats really don't like?
I've got two cats, and and one of them in particular, there's almost no hope. You have to provide a barrier in my case. But Tova, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just put up a picture of my cat, you know, just snarling at a citrus plant.
Oh, they don't like, many don't like the smell of citrus.
He does not like I have a Calamundin orange. He does not like it. He does not like that plant. So it's not, you know, he just doesn't like it. But I find that plants that he bothers them. You know, he doesn't eat anything, but he does shred things, and he actually has more of a tendency to bother things with grass-like foliage,
yeah,
like cordylines and dracaenas and that sort of thing. He bothers those more than other plants. So you might stay away from the grass-like foliage. There's a lot of plants you'll see that have that kind of foliage. Plants that you should, you know, there are a lot of plants that are, you know, you should stay away from if you have a cat. A lot of plants are particularly poisonous. And a very good website for that is the ASPCA.org has a really good list of plants. And they have cats, they have dogs, and they even have birds that they tell you plants not to grow.
Oh.
And they kind of rate them, tell you how dangerous they are. So that's very helpful.
Oh, yes, it would be.
ASPCA.org. Mm-hmm. We could even post that. Yeah, Brandy's going to put it up on our Facebook page, too.
Oh, thank you, yeah. So, you asked about potting soil for your Christmas cactus. And they like they're not a type of plant that absolutely has to have a cactus or succulent soil. They would like a soil with good drainage, such as one with a lot of sand. So if you were going out and looking for specific soil and you found one that was called a cactus or succulent soil, that would be the best.
Okay.
But you can always add a little bit of sand, sort of builder sand to any soil, or I find that they're not finicky. You know, soils that have less peat, they'd be happiest with. And, of course, soils that aren't now, a way to test soil to see if it's right potting soil, see if it's a good potting soil, is to moisten it, put it in your hand and make a fist, and make a ball out of it. Not, you know, you don't have to really do it tight, but make a slight ball, open your hand, and if it falls apart, that's a good consistency of potting soil.
Yeah.
That's all good.
That's a good way. And back to the cats for a minute. They, Coco, my cat, likes even limey. And so I have aluminum foil. I put aluminum foil around in the pot.
Oh, okay.
I crumpled up, and some around the base. And cats just do not like aluminum foil. And I haven't yet. I was thinking about getting some with kind of festive color instead of just the plain old aluminum foil look. But I haven't found that yet. Maybe with holiday wrapping paper and stuff.
Yeah, they're going to pencil. That's
but
not good.
The cats.
Tinsel,
yeah.
Yeah, they can eat. I've heard that. They can eat tinsel. So
oh, yeah,
do
you don't want tinsel, but no. Aluminum foil, they do not like to walk on it.
Interesting. You know, and people do for the tops of plants. You know, some people have cats that scratch into large plants. So they take and put, you can do anything, really. You can put, like, a piece of cardboard over the top, or you can, what you can do is just top dress with, like, beautiful river stone, mm-hmm. or that sort of thing. Just put a, you know, sort of a top dressing on top of it.
Yeah, and I, once again, I use aluminum foil. Doesn't look the nicest always,
well,
but
that's where you need the colorful.
Yeah, that's where you need the colorful. Judy, thank you. Thank you so much for calling. We're visiting today with Tova Martin, the author of a dozen gardening books, including the one we're kind of zeroing in on today. It's called The Indestructible Houseplant, 200 Beautiful Plants That Everyone Can Grow, along with some wonderful photos to go along with her writing. I'm Larry Mueller. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be visiting about organic garden practices and learn how to build healthy soil. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, we're taking a look at houseplants with Tova Martin, author of The Indestructible Houseplant. And I hope you'll join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. All our lines are currently filled. If you want to go to our Facebook page, you can post a photo and or question there. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Karen in Manitouish up next with a question. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I think I have an indestructible houseplant. I have a Hoya, H-O-Y-A,
mm-hmm.
that I have known this plant for at least 50 years. It always dining room. I know. It always sat on the dining room table at my mother-in-law's house. When she passed away, I took it to my house, and I keep it in the winter in a very sunny, the sunniest window that I have. Well, I had it for years and years. It never bloomed. And 2 years ago, it bloomed. And I put it outside. I kind of threatened it. You know how you do sometimes? And you say, listen, if you don't bloom, you're out of here. And I put it
tough love.
I put it outside that summer. And sure enough, if it didn't bloom, well, it bloomed again this summer. But now I see it's literally growing out of the bottom of its pot.
Uh-huh.
And I can't find much information on the Hoya, and I don't know what kind of, how big of a pot to put it in now.
Oh, well.
I would say it's only in, probably like a 6-inch pot right now.
Tova has a chapter on Hoyas.
You hit the nail on the head on the Hoya. It is so interesting that you should say that, because in with Hoyas, a lot of people inherit them because they're long-lived plants, mm-hmm. And they, you know, just go on and on and on. But they, a lot of people kill them, not kill them, but they are too kind to them. They put them in larger pots, give them more root room, and bango, they stop blooming. And they like to be pot bound. They dote on cramped shoes, in a way, and they bloom best when they are in, you know, when their roots are all cramped into a pot. So, all those years that you waited, you know, it might have been because the plant was filling into the pot. I'm so interested, though, that you're saying about bright light, because I find that my Hoya will burn in a bright, bright window.
Well, I put it in the winter. I put it in the west window,
mm-hmm.
In an upstairs bedroom where it stays, we keep it kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, if we have many, many days of sun in the winter, which usually doesn't happen, but I'll cock the blind a little bit
so that
it gets that little bit bright filtered light.
Yeah.
And in the summer when I put it out, it gets some afternoon sun. But when we have real hot weather, I did notice that some of the leaves did burn. And then I moved it to the other side of the porch where it did not get that intense light.
Yeah. Now, here's a plant that, you know, most of us have windows that aren't, you know, very bright.
Right.
So this is just the perfect plant for that situation. It doesn't even want light.
Interesting.
Well, the Hoya the photos that you have in your book of the Hoya are really nice. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant.
That's in my bedroom right now.
And,
but
is it?
And the flowers on it are so interesting.
A star within a star within a star.
Yes.
Karen, is yours fragrant?
Slightly, not very much.
Mine, the one with a crinkled leaf that looks like little fortune cookies on a trailing around, that one has a scent like hot chocolate.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's like a diet ruiner.
Oh, my goodness.
Just be careful. Don't eat the plant.
I wouldn't eat the plant, but it does make me hungry.
Well, thank you very much. Now I know I will leave it alone.
Yeah.
I won't be transplanting that at all.
Yeah, yeah. And keep up that tough love. I love that. That's a good idea.
Very good idea. Thanks, Karen. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, I hope she gets a look at your book, the Hoya in your book, and kind of compares it to her own. Mark in Sheboygan has a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry and Gus. Thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
My question is, I have an orange tree that I have been growing since I was a kid in 2000. It's now 2015, and the orange tree has gotten so big, it's almost the ceiling, but it hasn't produced any oranges. I'm wondering if you have any insight on what I'm doing wrong or what I could do better.
Did you grow it from seed?
I did not. We went to Florida for a family vacation, and my souvenir was an orange tree that I got in the airport. So it was just a little seedling.
So it was a tiny little cutting when you got it?
Correct.
Okay. They do take at least seven years from seed. So, you know, you could sort of count down, but still, 15 years.
That's pretty long.
Mark, you're a patient man.
I could say that. I should say.
I'm just going to go over a few things that citrus like, and you can. This will be like a checklist for you. They like as much light as you can give them, so a south window would be ideal. They like warmer temperatures. They can, if they're grown cool, they'll probably still be all right, but the foliage will not be great. You know, the color won't be great on it. It'll kind of look yellowish because they don't utilize the micronutrients well in cold temperatures. They're hungry plants. They like a lot of fertilizer, and I always say it's best not to fertilize your houseplants between Thanksgiving and March, but citrus is the exception. They are hungry plants, and they do like to be pruned. I'm thinking usually. Mark, has it ever blossomed?
It has not blossomed. I think my biggest problem is I do not feed it enough. I have been pruning, and I do take it outside in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's in the house during the winter, obviously, on a south window, and it stays warm enough. The leaves haven't discolored at all. They've always been green, and I get new growth, but no blossoms.
How big is the plant now, Mark?
It's to the ceiling, so...
Wow.
10 feet or 8 feet, huh?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but it's probably 8 feet.
Oh, my.
Well, I'm thinking it might be food. Put it a little closer to those light, the light source. You're good. Those blossoms are the precursor to fruit, so that has to happen first.
And limey gets some, what is that, a fish emulsion, some sort of fertilizer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I throw in with every watering.
Wow, you're generous, huh?
Well,
it does need the breakfast of champions.
Yeah, limey likes it. I'll tell you, it's doesn't seem to bother her any. She certainly produces plenty of fruit.
Yeah, yeah. Fish emulsion is what I use too. They say it's doesn't smell, but they lie. Am I right?
Oh, it smells.
Mary?
Yeah.
Yeah, it smells. But you just go out for a few hours and it's fine.
Yeah, when Limey's indoors, she gets it in the morning just before I leave for work.
Okay. Rather than when you come home.
Yes, not when I come home.
Yeah, right.
There we go.
And both cats are big smiles on their faces, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Good luck, Mark. And is it possible Mark has a tree here that just never going to, is not?
You know, are
there male trees? Or are they...
No, but you've got a really good point. There are citrus out there that are not good, are not good fruiting plants. So my favorite, now you like the lime. I love the Calamundan orange. That's a nice compact. It's a hybrid between a tangerine and a kumquat, and it blooms and fruits very well.
And what is it again?
A Calamundan orange.
Oh.
It's not large fruit. It's small fruit because it's got kumquat in the ancestry. But it is a very easy indoor, very prolific fruiting citrus.
So, Mark, alongside that orange of yours, you might want to put in a Calamundan.
Yeah. I would suggest you try, Karen's approach and give it the... Bloom or you're out.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I was wondering, a friend asked me, she'd just gotten an orchid. I presume it's in the rest period now, but she didn't have any orchid food and wondered if African violet food would work. I don't know the difference between the numbers, so I wasn't quite sure what to tell her.
I don't know. I just go with the fish emulsion for everything, to tell you the truth. And it seems to work for me. I don't think that orchids are very, very finicky about the the fertilizer they use. I would suggest that, you know, it might be many of the orchids will begin to gear up into blooming over the winter. So, you know, this is the time when they're beginning to start to think about blooming. So, you know, her lack of blooms could just be a seasonal thing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Meg in Lesoir, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Tova. Thanks so much for having my call. I, like you, am an inveterate underwaterer. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, when I do water, should I be watering from the bottom or should I be watering from the top? And I think what I'll do is hang up and make room for another caller.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Meg. I don't think it really, first of all, Larry, I didn't give you my confession yet. I have over 300 houseplants. So, and like every year, I think I started out with this doing the show, and I only had 200. But it's gotten worse. so with that many plants, it's hard to water. You know, it's hard to water from the base or bring them to the sink or anything like that. So I just water them from the top. Just, you know, with a watering can. Just go around with a watering can. The only thing that doesn't really like that are the African violets. They don't like cool water on the leaves. So, you know, just be careful when you're watering. Don't get the leaves wet.
Now, do you have a watering schedule? Like, you know, I'll do 100 plants today and then...
I try to water when my mother calls because I just talk on the phone and water. But I don't suggest doing it on a schedule because nature is sort of, you know, one week will be cloudy, another week will be very sunny, one week the furnace might be on a whole lot, another week it won't be. And, you know, plants dry out according to really, you know, they are dependent on the outdoor climate, even though you're growing them indoors. So I suggest you check the plants and see if the soil is dry. You can do it by, you know, kind of tucking your finger in there.
Yep.
How do you do it? How do you decide whether they're dry or not?
I actually have a device.
Ooh.
That you stick in the, it's a prong, two-pronged contraption.
Little meter?
Yeah, with a meter on it, and you stick it into the soil, and it gives you the percent, you know, it tells you if the plant is in the proper area of in terms of moisture and fertilizer.
Interesting.
and I actually use it. Well, I don't use it every time, but if I'm looking at limey, for example, let me just stick this in. You know, it takes like a second, and
yeah.
It gives you a reading.
Well, you know, I mean, there are those instances where it's obvious that it's looking very dry. But, you know, however you do it, you know, some people, my mother picks hers up and sees if it's, you know, very light. And if it's very light, it's dry. You know, I'd be lifting a whole lot of plants. And limey's probably, what size pond is limey in?
What is it? About a foot and a half across?
Wow. That would take some muscle.
Yeah. But limey's kept, she's a delicate miss.
No wonder she's still outside, huh?
Yeah.
She's a big one.
She can handle it, for sure. Well, Doug in Cedar Grove has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, hi. I just had another great suggestion for one of those unkillable plants. I've got a plant I rescued, though, a few years ago from an apartment that had been vacated, and this plant had gone for 3-4 months without getting watered.
Wow.
It still looked vigorous. And I've been told it's called a wandering Jew. It's okay. It's all purple leaves, kind of a powder blue, slightly purplish flower. But yeah, so I take it upstairs and I go to repot it, and I notice there's some roots coming out from the bottom of the pot that have developed little tiny hairs. They look like pipe cleaners.
Mm.
So the thing was actually pulling moisture out of the air.
Wow.
Yeah,
there you go. There's a plant that is going to, you know, that's a survivor plant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's somewhat delicate. It breaks off the long stems real easily. But you take those and you stick them in dirt and just water them, and the thing, it doesn't even wilt while it's setting the new roots.
And it is that that's Tradescantia, and that is in my book as one of the indestructible houseplants. They are really rock solid plants that you cannot. You know, you might want to kill them, and you can't.
Oh my goodness me, that is very cool. Thanks a lot for calling, Doug. Appreciate it. We have let's go to Peggy in Tigerton. Hi, Peggy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering about a eucalyptus, the silver drop eucalyptus. I got it as a tiny little thing in the spring and put it in a container with other things, and it was wonderful all summer, but I'm trying to bring it in. Is that a good idea? I know it won't make it through the winter.
Right. It's not hardy, but, it's a very good idea, Peggy. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a time of year when a lot of people are bringing their plants in or recently brought them in. It's a good idea to, as you said, break it apart from the other plants in the combination planter. So don't keep it, trying to compete with its neighbors in a mixed container. But if you can sort of, take it out of that venue, pot it separately, bring it in. Eucalyptus is not a difficult houseplant. It can, it's native to very hot, dry areas, and some of our houses tend to be that way. It actually would love a south window, but east or west would probably be good. I find that in the winter, west is best.
Ah, okay, it's in the south window right now.
Oh, perfect. Well, no, south is the best. West is second best. How's that?
Yeah.
Can I trim it? It's about 18 inches tall and spreading.
You sure can. You can cut it back down, and it will branch.
Okay.
There you go.
Yay!
Hey, thanks, Peggy. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tova Martin, our guest today, she is the author of this book we've been talking about and referring to from time to time. It's called The Indestructible Houseplant. 200 plants that everyone can grow. Great stories about each of these plants, and along with some absolutely wonderful photography of what the plants look like and how they thrive under her obvious skill. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. As we talk with Tova Martin about indestructible houseplants, we'd love to have her with us and certainly enjoy having you call in. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. We have lots of Facebook questions. I tell you what, we should probably go through a couple here. Amy from Appleton emailed, this is an email, and said that this goes back to cats in the houseplant pots. She top dresses her plants liberally with cayenne pepper.
Ooh.
And that cat proofs her plants.
Mm.
Which probably not a bad idea.
Definitely would dissuade them.
Yeah, definitely would display them. Karen on Facebook wonders, why do scented plants like lilies and Hoyas smell more at night?
That's a good question. Not all scented plants smell more at night, but I find that Hoyas And lilies definitely do. You can almost follow your nose to your house with them. It depends on what they're pollinated by, really. Moth pollinated plants might be more apt to be more heavily scented at night. You might just be more around to smell them at night. Because I find that lilies are pretty fragrant during the day also, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and
I guess the answer is it depends on the pollinator. It will tell you, things that are bat pollinated, like, those night blooming cereus and that sort of thing, they only are fragrant and they only bloom at night.
Eric on Facebook says, all this talk about lime trees today, I have to have one. Is there anywhere in Milwaukee where I can buy one?
Ooh, do you know that, Larry?
I'm thinking, I'm sure that any of the there are some great shops, garden centers, where they may not have them in stock, but can order them. Actually, you can order lime trees online. I got mine. Mine was delivered. Mine is a Bears lime tree.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Bears makes lime, and I think makes lemons as well. Bears with two S's on the end. And I think I wound up ordering mine online, although for most of the time, I'd rather get them from a local garden center, to be perfectly honest. So if you go to your local garden center and say, hey, I want a lime tree, they should be able to get one for you.
How old is Limey?
Oh, what is it now? Four or five years?
Oh, okay, wow. That's a good endorsement, because that's fast blooming a lot, and as long as I've been talking to you, Limey's been pumping out the fruit, so.
Forever, yeah. Practically from the, well, not from the month that she arrived, but a year didn't go by, I don't think, it was pretty quick. So, Sydney in Georgia has a question for us. Let's go to Georgia. Hi, Sydney.
Hello. How are y'all today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay. For the last couple of years, I bought my mother orchids like the lady that's talking about it a while ago. I bought her one every year for Mother's Day, and them things bloomed every Mother's Day after that. Well, right now, they haven't bloomed in probably the last 2 years, and I'm wondering, is the roots getting bound on them, or?
Yeah.
Now, that's a really good question, because orchids do like to have their potting medium changed. What happens is many orchids are sort of native to regions. They grow in trees. They grow with a lot of air around the roots. What happens when you have soil in the pot too long is it sort of breaks down and compacts, and they want it very fluffy. So what you could do is just take the plant out of the pot. You'll see the roots are like caterpillars. They're very large and thick. Just shake out the old potting soil and put in, you can just use like wood chips people use moss, that sort of thing, and just, lightly pack it around those roots and make sure that they're getting, all the air they need. They're a little different than other plants because of this, the fact that they grow usually on trees.
Yes, I noticed that the packing in them looks like wood chips when I've got them. Because they come in different size pots when I bought them, and I know every color that I bought her because I took pictures of all of them, but I remember what colors I got.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they will perform again when you give them, a new kind of a new reinvigorating potting soil, potting medium.
The last two that I did get her was a dark purple and a light and a dark blue color, and they had over 24 blooms on them.
Whoa.
Wow. Lucky mother.
You are a good son, Sydney.
Well, I've always bought her one every year for Mother's Day, and then when they would stay bloom for like 6 months, and then they'd go away, and then by next Mother's Day, they came right back.
Well, that's perfect. Well, you take Tova's advice, because she knows what she's talking about there. I've had other people talk about orchids on the show as well, and that's the advice I keep hearing.
Yeah,
for sure. Thank you for calling.
Good luck with it.
You're welcome. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Yeah,
Thank you
as well. Thanks, Sydney. And boy, we have so many emails and so many Facebook comments and so many callers. Let's go to Denny in Sugar Camp. Hi, Denny.
Hi. About a year ago, I called with an orange tree problem, almost identical to the guy before, except mine's 30 years old. Never bloomed. And at that time, you suggested that I put a grow light on it, and I did for the winter. Had it on for 18 hours a day on a timer. And in April of this year, you know, when the days got longer, I shut off the grow light, and within about a month, the leaves turned brown. And all the leaves turned brown and started falling off. But I didn't, after 30 years, I didn't have the heart to throw the tree away. So it just sat there. I didn't water it. I didn't do anything. And finally in June, I thought, well, I got to get it out of the living room. The leaves are all over the place. And when I went to haul it out, I realized that some of the shoots were apparently alive. So I took it outside, put it in my hoop house, and let it set, and the leaves started coming back, and I trimmed off all the dead stuff. So now I have a pretty, you know, cut back tree, but I have leaves on it again. And I'm wondering, you know, I don't want to put a grow light on it again if that's what caused it. Do you have any ideas?
And it's what type of plant is it again?
Orange.
It's an orange tree.
A grow light shouldn't cause that, but it's hard to give a large tree enough light through grow lights because, you know, they're just, you can't, the foliage close enough.
Yeah, for 30 years it sat in the window and it was happy, but it just never bloomed, and so you guys suggested to put a grow light on it, which I did, and after I turned the grow light off in the spring, it seemed to just die.
Well, apparently,
really wasn't dead because eventually I got leaves back on it. But it sat for 2 months with no water, no nothing. All the leaves were brown. The twigs were, you know, brittle. I could snap them off. And when I finally thought I turned ink pens, so I was just kind of cut it up and make ink pens. And, you know, I thought, well, at least I'll get something out of it. But when I went to haul it outside, I realized that it wasn't dead.
Yeah,
and eventually it leafed out again.
Well, with that new vigor, if I were you, I would not. I'd stay away from that grow light thing. Put it back in the window, and again, you know, I think we've got, you know, maybe this issue of some varieties being better bloomers and fruit producers than other varieties. But, you know, it all has to do with light. Try, you know, giving a little bit more food and warmth. That's another thing that they like. They do best when temperatures do not go below, say, 65 at night.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Denny. Appreciate your call. Actually, you know, when Limey comes in, Limey's on grow lights.
Is Limey? Wow. Are they supplemental? Or does she?
Right. She's in a south window.
Oh, okay. So you got, like, you're giving her.
She's getting a lot of light.
She's got the queen treatment.
Well, she deserves it.
She does.
Oh, man. Patricia and Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Aloha, Larry. I just wanted to add to the woman who called in about the Hoya. I have a slip from my late mother-in-law who got it from her mother, and I have a picture of their farmhouse from the 1920s with that Hoya twisted around in a circle in one of their windows. And I have mine, it is pot-bound in a little 12-ounce cottage cheese carton.
Oh, my goodness,
carton.
That is small, yeah.
And you keep the plant dry. And one thing I've learned is you don't cut off those spurs where the flowers are attached, because let the flowers fall off naturally, and many times the new blooms come on those spurs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I don't expect it to bloom every year. It blooms when it wants to bloom.
I like that.
And I have it in a north window.
There you go. Don't try to predict your Hoya.
No, and I always know when it's in bloom. It's in a spare bedroom, and when I'll go down that hall, oh, you can smell it, especially at night.
Oh, it is. Isn't that a wonderful scent?
Yeah.
That's why I keep mine in my bedroom.
Right. Thank you for the program.
I should get a Hoya plant, I guess. Because
you should.
I like a plant that smells. And limey, actually, you know, a little citrus. Limey sits in my bedroom.
Well, you know, they say that citrus is the universally one of a favorite scent. Everybody likes citrus.
Yeah, I sure like citrus. That is definitely the case. Well, Tova Martin is our guest. Tova is the author of many books, 12 at least, including The Indestructible Houseplant, 200 Beautiful Plants That Everyone Can Grow. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Friday always means Garden Talk, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that share your home and with other indoor spaces. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We have with us Tova Martin, the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Indestructible Houseplant. And Tova, thank you again for spending time with us today on Garden Talk.
I am having so much fun.
Isn't that a good? Oh, it's so much fun. I'm really enjoying it as well, and I'm hoping. I think our listeners are too. You can tune in, by the way, if you have a question or comment. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And, oh, there's so many Facebook comments. Is fall or spring better for planting a flowering crabapple tree? Steve says, well, it's obviously too late for that now.
Spring is always best, don't you?
Yeah, I think spring is best.
Yeah.
So I'd wait on that. Jim emailed and wonders, how do you go about growing a butterfly milkweed or a milkweed plant that butterfly like from seed? Can you do that?
They're pretty easy from
seed,
I find. They, you know, it takes a little while for them to become a larger plant, but it only about 2 years or so, and then they'll start blooming. And it's a good economic way to grow more for the butterflies.
Yeah, actually, I think you're absolutely right. And let's see, some other comments here. Let me skip down through. Could you suggest some resources or perhaps a book for a young person, in this case, a 10-year-old, who's interested in gardening and growing things?
Ooh, you know, do you have any ideas, Larry?
You know, I don't right off the top of my head.
There are some good books for children, I believe. Susie Bales did a book a few years ago on gardening for children. That was very interesting.
Okay, so Susie, and you remember how Bale, her last name is spelled?
B-A-L-E-S.
B-A-L-E-S.
Mm.
So if you put Susie Bales garden book for kids, or for children, that's going to pop up.
Yeah, should.
Oh, all right, well, that's a good suggestion. And let's see, we've got Don from Heartland now with a question. Hi, Don, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, last week you were talking about butterfly bushes, and I tuned in late, and I didn't get it all. I was just wondering, my butterfly bushes are the variety that grow to be 3 to 5 feet tall and 3 to 5 feet wide. I was just wondering if you cut them back for the winter or just leave them grow.
Larry, don't you find that the butterfly bush prefers to be pruned in the spring? I find that they don't like to be around here.
Yeah.
They don't like to be pruned in the fall because they sometimes they won't even come out of dormancy that way. So we around here, I'm in New England, we always prune only in the spring on the butterflies.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
There you go, Don. Thank you for calling. We have Alex in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a solid sansevieria, and it is slowly committing suicide on me, and I don't know what to do about it.
Sansevieria, really? You have trouble with it? Or
I've never had trouble with the sansevieria until I got this one, and it's like the very bottom next to the soil is going yellow, and then the leaf blades fall over, and when you pull them out, there's next to no root on them at all. And I've been growing these for 40 years. I'm not overwatering it. I know better than to use Miracle-Gro on it or Miracle-Gro soil, and it's getting moderate light.
And Tova, you have a nice chapter on sansevieria, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I love them.
Yeah, and as you said, the other ones are fine. Now, there are ones that are more difficult than others. There's some sansevierias getting the snit. It's true. But I'm thinking that could it possibly be the soil? Because you're telling what made me suspicious was that comment about the yellowing right at the soil level. So I'm thinking that the soil might be a soil that's very poorly drained, and it's making the plant rot.
It's in a succulent soil.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Because that's sure what it sounded like to me,
it's
too.
It's like the foolproof plan is making a fool of me, and it's driving me crazy.
Well, there are ones that are, you know, sansevierias, mother-in-law's tongues, have suddenly gotten very, very popular again, and they're collectors. There's botanical gardens that have whole collections of hundreds of different sansevierias. But so there are ones that are very, you know, some that are easy, some of them not so easy. But usually, unless you've gone to like a specialty nursery, most of them are pretty diehard.
Yeah, this one was, I've had it for about 3 years, and it's nothing special. It's a solid color, not even the variegated, dark green. Purchased it like a Lowe's or a Menards or something because it just happened to catch my eye, and I had a spot that if I moved everything else, I could get another plant in. So,
well, if I were you, I would shake out that soil.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a whole new, you know, I always say to people, don't give it a larger pot when it's not feeling well. You know, it would be like, you know, giving somebody who's in the hospital a feast or something.
Yeah.
Shake out that soil, put it in fresh soil. That's what I'm thinking. And maybe even downsize the pot.
Is the succulent soil good to use again?
I don't find that sansevierias really need a special succulent soil. I just give them a usual potting soil.
Okay.
So switch it around. I mean, you have nothing to lose.
That's true. I'm already losing this one.
Yeah.
Can I try to root the blades if I dip them into a rooting powder?
Yeah.
A sphagnum moss?
If I were you, I'd cut it way up, you know, away from that diseased. I suppose you could say that certain plants maybe are not as healthy as other plants, you know?
That's what I'm
individuals
looking at.
Might just not be particularly thrifty animals.
Hmm. I really love this little guy. He's just not doing well. And I keep propping him up. I've now got ribbon around to hold his knees upright so they won't flop over. Mm. You know, because there's virtually no root growth at the bottom. It, when they fall out, it's just, it looks like root rot, but
it's got to be the soil. It's got to be the soil.
Yeah, it definitely. Good luck, Alex. Appreciate your call. Oh, Mary shot us a note on Facebook and wondered about Will Allen's new book, gardening book for young children. And that's a possibility, too. I don't think it's aimed right at young children.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that he had one. That's interesting.
So it's worth a look anyway. Amy in Oxford, it's your turn. Let's see. First, I have to turn you on here. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll be inheriting a Christmas cactus that I believe is, that I remember that my grandmother had, and it's probably, I'm not going to tell you my age, but it's 50 years plus.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering how to, you know, keep it alive. I don't know a lot about the Christmas cactus. It's huge. I don't know if I need to transplant it into some different pot. You know, I don't remember the last time it bloomed, but I just need some tips on taking care of it.
That's another plant like the Hoya that some people kind of kill with kindness.
Yeah.
They give it to, you know, they inherit it and they give it, you know, a larger pot, and it doesn't really want it.
Okay.
It does best when it's a little bit pot-bound, you know, root-bound, like most cactus and succulents. So don't overdo that. And another thing that I find that people go wrong with the Christmas cactus is actually it doesn't like bright,
no,
you know, hot sun. It likes it. You find that too, Larry?
Yes, I had a great one in my office for years and years, and it was relatively shaded and it was cool in there, and I would always forget to water it, so it got low lights. It was in cool conditions, and it sometimes didn't get water for a couple weeks,
and it
thrived and it bloomed all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes they don't know that they're Christmas cactus, and they, you know, bloom off schedule. But
like a northern window would be worthwhile?
Not north, no. East or west.
East or west, okay.
Yeah, east or west would be best. North is a little too low.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, east or west.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, that plant, and I gave that... I gifted that to someone who killed it. I was moving offices, and I thought, oh, give it to somebody, and didn't take long. Killed it with kindness, as you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Wayne in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Wayne.
Hello there, Larry. Yes, I had been listening to your program, and somebody called in about butterfly bush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that I bought a butterfly bush. It was one of the garden centers here in West Allis. It was like on sale, quite a bit off. It was, you know, like the end of the season or whatever. So I bought it with the idea of taking it up north, west of Green Bay. I've got a property and some big gardens up there, and I'd like to plant it up there. And it says it's hardy to minus 20 degrees.
And where is your place?
It's between Mountain and Lakewood. That's like northwest of Green Bay, about 150 miles.
Yeah, that
20 below is only zone 5, right? Right.
Yeah, it's not going to. Yeah, I don't think it's going to make it up there.
You don't think it's going to make it, huh?
Well, it's going to be low. It's going to get more than 20 below.
I know. I bought
it
a year ago.
It's good snow cover.
The first year
it
was like 30 below, minus 30 degrees.
Yeah, if you've got snow cover, you know, of course you can't count on it.
But if you cover it with straw and mulch and stuff like that, it's not right now, it's a young plant. I'll call it a baby plant. It's only maybe 28 inches tall or from the top of the pot. Not even that much.
You know what, Wayne? you can give it a shot and see, and you know, do your best to kind of make sure that it has, you know, insulation and
a lot of covering. Yeah,
I have heard of a lot of people pushing zones with mulch. And, you know, even to the extent of, like, building a cage around something and filling it with leaves.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Yeah,
because...
Or something like that.
You don't have rot because the leaves sort of, you know, breathe. But, so that, you know, it's worth a shot.
Yeah, why not?
Call Larry next spring and tell him what happened.
Tell me what happened. That's right. Good luck, Wayne. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. We have Jim in Appleton next. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking the call. I'm not the gardener, so I was just doing some maintenance work for my wife on some plants, potted plants we had on the deck. And I noticed that as I was cleaning out these pots, throwing out the dead stuff, one of these had developed a bunch of, appear to be bulbs. And I was just wondering if, and I don't know the plant, you know, like I said, I'm not the gardener. But I was wondering if those were plantable and if there was a way to store those and, you know, what you should try to do if you want to give it a shot.
Well, I take it you don't know exactly what type of bulb you're dealing with here.
Yeah.
Am I right? Is the bulb above the soil or below the soil?
Below
the soil. What I would suggest you do, I take it it's dormant now, right? It's gone into, it's sleeping, right? No foliage.
Right.
Okay. What you can do is you can just let the plant dry out. Most bulbous plants, I mean, I'm just taking a wild guess here, but most bulbous plants like to dry out when they're not growing. So leave it, don't water it, just... You could keep it in that soil, but keep the soil very dry. Bring it in and just store it. And then keep an eye on it late in the winter and early in the spring. See if you see any growth coming off that. And then if you do see any growth at all, put it back in the light. Start watering it and see what you got.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, these bulbs are kind of clustered, so would I separate them and create different plants, or what would I...
No, leave it alone right now. You can do that next spring when it's growing, but right now, just keep it in a holding pattern because it doesn't really want to be fussed over right now. It doesn't want new soil. It just wants to sleep.
Good luck, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. I want a little note here from Brandon, who sent a beautiful flower photo and wanted me, well, here's what he says. Please give or here's what she says. He or she says, please give a shout to Frank, our mailman in Wisconsin Dells. He grows beautiful flowers.
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Frank, the man, and, you know, we have a lot of mail carriers who listen to this program.
Oh, really? Okay.
A lot of, especially rural mail carriers they're in their car, and so they're traveling around delivering the mail, and, of course, they have public radio on.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening.
And, yeah, and thanks a lot to Frank the Mailman from Wisconsin Dells. Here's Sue in Milwaukee. Hi, Sue. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about a Kimberly Queen fern. I've had it for a couple of years. It's gorgeous. It's huge. And I've always overwintered it in the house, and it's just a pain because it's so messy. And I was thinking about, we have an insulated garage, and I know that the plant can withstand down to 32 degrees. And I was thinking about putting it, keeping it in the garage. We have the daylight fluorescent lights out there.
Mm.
And so I was wondering if that might work and if I would keep watering it.
Now, what type of fern is it again?
It's a Kimberly Queen fern. It's actually from Australia.
I don't know that fern.
I don't know that fern either, but Australia is telling me that... it, you know, it, if that, if it does go below freezing, you might be in trouble.
Yes.
So it's tricky. It's tricky. You'd have to want to take the risk. I would, you know, if you've got grow lights and you've got, you know, light problem, doesn't sound like light's really a problem, but it, I guess, do it at your own risk.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah, it actually doesn't get a lot of good light when I bring it in, which is probably the reason it loses so many leaves, but it's so big for the space I have to put it in, and I'm just kind of tired of cleaning it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find people that tend to give their plants too large pots, and you can sometimes, you know, either hold the status quo or even sometimes downsize by doing a little bit of a root pruning, that type
okay.
of thing.
Uh-huh. And the other, my other thought was perhaps I could use a big garbage bag, put it in that, and surround it with leaves to keep it warmer, maybe.
Oh, to keep it from freezing, the root
right.
from freezing. Worth a try. I mean, also you could monitor the temperature, and if it does look like it's, you know, on the verge, you could just whisk it in and whisk it out again.
True.
That's another
it's hard
possibility.
To whisk.
That's really whiskable.
Yeah. But we do have heat in the garage, so if it gets really, really cold, I could,
yeah.
I could turn that on for a bit.
True, true. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
I think
all
it's
right.
worth a try.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, another listener called in. This is about going back to gardening books for children, and recommended or suggested Sharon Lovejoy's.
Oh yeah, very good. Yes, yes, yes.
That is a great
suggestion. Great suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let's see if we got time for one more quick one.
And by the way, Larry, yeah. I'm going to stay on Facebook for your. So I can answer questions on Facebook after we go off the air.
Oh, that is so wonderful, Tova.
It's so much fun.
Well, let's see if we can get Dan in from Gays Mills then. Dan, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Have you got a quick one for us?
Yeah, I just had a comment about a hardy plant. My old girlfriend gave me a corn plant years ago, and I had it for about 10 years, and my house started smelling like cat urine at night, and I took me a couple nights to figure out that that plant was blooming in the middle of the night.
The revenge of your old girlfriend. The girlfriend's gone, but the corn plant's there.
That's
the plant out because it smelled so bad.
I was growing a succulent like that, and oh boy, it had the worst smell. I had to like put it outside at night. It was terrible.
Tova, you're a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I love your book, and I'm glad that you're going to be able to stay on Facebook for a while. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I have so much fun.
Tova Martin, author of many gardening books, including The Indestructible Houseplant. That's the book we've been talking about today, and she'll stay online. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. That's our Facebook page title, and you can visit with her. She'll answer some more questions. And believe me, there are a lot up there right now. Oh, goodness me. Monday, we'll talk about the famous Armistice Day storm and then about the autumn cold snaps in Wisconsin, why they're so short-lived. Stay with us.